I take a deep breath and I press the magic buttons in front of me. We've heard the band and therefore it means, yes, it's Tuesday. That's where we've moved to. But it's that particular time when either you listen to the live broadcast, the podcast, the pre-recording or the repeat. It's time to open the door and skip across the Atlantic, skip across most of America and end up Los Angeles, just stopping before we hit the water and say, is Bruce K. Rosenblum in his man cave?
Bruce K. Rosenblum is in his man cave. Let me just put on my glasses so I can hear you better.
Oh, what? You stupid boy, Rosenblum. No. The first thing, before we go anywhere, I know we shed loads of stuff. You had to rush off last week. There are all sorts of strange reasons why we had to change the timing of the program. And we are recording this at 20 minutes to 4 on Tuesday the 9th. So that gives you a reference point. You had to go off because your knees have been giving you grief. Now, I know it's something to do with our age, but did you get your knees sorted out? Are you able to sprint and power and do all that stuff that you love doing?
No, I'm afraid not. I'm afraid that my right knee is the size of a basketball and has deteriorated 30% worse than it was a year ago. So this coming Thursday, I'm getting an MRI on that knee to determine what the next step is. I have a feeling you will be, next time I see you, I'll have a new knee.
Oh, fantastic. A brand spanking. Now, I can recommend
a spanking new knee. So I'll keep you all posted.
I have got lots of family things that people are shouting at the radio saying, it's fine, Bruce, go for it. My father had both his knees done. Perfect. He was walking better after he had them done than he had done for many years. And my mother-in-law, Eunice, had both of hers done at the same time and was up walking within 2 or 3 days. So you have nothing to worry about, my friend.
Yeah. My CPA, my accountant, who helped me with my taxes, his wife said that she was in and out of the hospital the same day, and she was up and walking.
Fantastic.
And if they do it arthroscopically, there's no big scars anymore. It's a much simpler procedure. So I'm not too worried about it. But yeah, it's hard. I mean, I can't – if I kneel down, I have to, you know, find a way to get back up. I was very athletic as a kid and I'd still, you know, run and lift weights and do all that stuff to try to stay in shape. And yet if I kneel down to play with my grandson – I have the hardest time in the world getting up. It is that painful.
Well, let me.
It's just the little things that you just really realize how debilitating something like this can be.
Well, for some people, kneeling down, it goes with the job, as it did with my father, who was a Church of England priest, an Anglican priest. And of course, he had to do a lot of kneeling down and he was finding that difficult. And that was one of the reasons that he managed to get early retirement was because, quote, well, you're a vicar and you can't kneel. Well, you might as well retire. So he managed to get early retirement because he couldn't get down on one knee two knees to pray. Anyway, we're not going to go there any further. You're going to be fine. And we are going to do, you always send me a briefing beforehand because you are up far too early in the day. But then, you know, as the mornings are getting lighter, all sorts of reasons for getting up. And you said, apart from all the political stuff, which we do talk of, the biggest story rattling around, not just America and the United Kingdom, but it appears is the world, is the one that we can't avoid, which was the fallout from the Oprah Winfrey interview, which screened over the weekend, I think, with you, and screened for us yesterday here in the United Kingdom. I have to say, and this is a spoiler alert, well, it isn't a spoiler alert, I cannot comment on it because we recorded it. We were doing other things, watching other programs last night. In fact, we were watching something called Designated Survivor with Kiefer Sutherland, but more of that later. Non-sequitur or an oxymoron?
I can't remember the word. There's a word that you use to describe. I'm sure. Metaphor. That could be the metaphor for what's going on.
It probably is, actually. But
the survivor.
We're not going to advertise Netflix, but the first episode really had us hooked. Meanwhile, back with the royals and the crown and all the other stuff, we are surrounded by the fallout from the interview between Harry and Meghan and Oprah Winfrey. And we can't avoid it, but you, bless you, in our little pre-chat, have come up with a really interesting way of looking at some of the issues which it's thrown up. So I'm going to give you the floor, because as I say, I don't ask me to comment on the interview. All I've seen in the news clips and the clips that the production company dripped out over the last 4 or 5 days running up to it. So the floor is yours, my man.
Yeah, and I, like I said in my note, I said You know, first of all, it's a shame that the Queen, who's, what, 100 years old, and has experienced and seen more things in this world and in this lifetime than most of us can imagine, is now having to deal with this kind of a family issue. I mean, and then I also looked at it. I tried to look at it. I didn't want to get political on this because I know the sensitivities, and you're being unable to really comment about it. But maybe we can have a conversation if we take it in a little bit different direction. And I'm not here to cast judgment on the royal family and whether the monarchy is a necessary thing like Fox News does and berate these people because they're people of privilege and how dare they, you know, who do they think they are, you know, who are they to talk and do this, you know, they've got all this money and they're living in this wonderful place up in Montecito and blah, blah, blah. I'm not, you know, that's just the haters and the distraction that happens. But what this is reminding me of, I read a book and then it became a TV series back in the 70s. It was by Irwin Shaw called Rich Man, Poor Man. And it was about these two brothers that grew up and one, you know, kind of was straight laced, played by the rules, realized the American dream, married his childhood sweetheart, you know, became very rich and powerful, ultimately became a U.S. senator, I believe. And the other brother was a free spirit who didn't really follow the rules, was always getting into fights and always getting, you know, into trouble and just kind of left home to, you know, to kind of sow his wild oats, which, you know, he did his whole life and worked on a ship and then became a boxer and, you know, God knows what this guy did. But at the end of the day, there's a force that's out there that's trying to get at the family, and they do at the end of the day become, you know, brothers. I mean, you know, it shows you that blood is thicker than water, but also what it says is just because you have privilege and you have money, does that really make you rich? And just because you don't, are you really poor? And at the end of the story is, you know, who was really the rich man here and who was really the poor man? And it seems as though the brother that was a free spirit that didn't really have much was the guy who was the happiest. And the guy who had all the money and all the trappings wasn't so happy, that he had more problems and issues in his life than he probably ever wanted to deal with. And I think that's kind of a similar, you know, thing that's going on here. It's that, you know, Meghan and Harry are getting knocked because they're children of privilege. I mean, none of us, you know, has any choice about what families we're born into. That's, you know, that was, you know, determined by a higher power. You know, those are the hands that they were dealt with. But, you know, they, you know, what it seems like they're asking for is just to be treated, you know, equally as any other family member. But, you know, it seems as though some hints of racism have come into the mix somehow, where the skin color of Archie, their son, was being called into question, and they were made to feel very uncomfortable and decided that it was best for them to walk away and not have to be a part of it, because it was affecting Meghan more so than Harry probably. But Harry, as the good husband, is sticking by his wife and which a good husband, loyal husband, should. You know, it affected her, and she even talked about suicidal thoughts. And I mean, in privilege or no privilege, money or no money, you know, when somebody's happiness and somebody's mental well-being are thrown into doubt, thrown into question, where you're going to, when you start having suicidal thoughts, I mean, that's very drastic. I mean, that's that fine line that you walk where if you cross over, there's no turning back. You will do something to harm yourself. And it should be taken seriously. And I think, you know, that should be the most important thing, is her mental well-being. And it's just kind of a sad situation that she got thrust into over that. But at the same time, you know, it's a hint of racism and the pressures that this family of privilege are feeling just over this, the what color the baby's skin will be before it's even born, to what's happening in Minnesota in this country, where systemic racism and police brutality and the killing of an unarmed black man in Minnesota is taking place at the same time. And it's just, you know, racism shows up in all different forms. And yet, you know, here's this family of privilege experiencing it on their level, And yet, you know, 2,000 miles away up in northern Minnesota, a trial starts today for the police officer who put his knee on the neck of George Floyd. And what they're going to try to do is attack the character of George Floyd and try to spin it where, you know, it was a justified police maneuver and not a murder. And so, you know, it's kind of surreal that, you know, all this is still happening in the year 2021, where we've had hundreds of years of experience to figure out how to deal with this. But obviously, as a society, we haven't. And I know I wear my naivety on my sleeve, and I won't make any apologies for being that way.
And you are the best for doing that.
I just don't get why people just can't respect one another for what's inside of a person's body rather than, you know, the wrapping on the outside. Because none of us can help how we were born and what we look like, you know. It's just, we can't. So all we really have to judge on when we're dealing with other people is, what do they offer us from a mental stimulation point of view? Do people can do things better? Can they teach us new ways? Are they compassionate? Are they empathetic? Are they friends? Or, you know, that's all we can really judge on, you know. And yet we fail to do that, and we make snap judgments on people just because of skin color, which to me is the most trivial of reasons to go to battle over. You know, and I think that that's something that you can chime in on, don't you think?
Well, let me tell you a brief story. I was talking to somebody prior to coming on to chat to you about this because, you know, it is probably the biggest issue. I certainly sympathize about anybody who says that they thought about taking their own life. That is horrific. But the race thing is interesting. And you say, why in the 21st century can't we handle this in a mature way? Let me take you back to the 1950s. And this is a family who... The mother-in-law, the older generation, they'd moved to this country from South Africa, and the husband and wife were a mixed race couple. So the daughter gets married in the 50s, and she wants to have children. She is getting ready to have her first child, and the doctor, and this is the 1950s, okay? This is 1950s Britain, Yorkshire, Leeds, okay? Leeds, not at that time awfully multicultural, okay? But the doctor sits the woman down. She's perhaps 8 or 9 months pregnant. He said, there's nothing to worry about. Pregnancy is going extremely well. But with the background to the family that you've told me, I just wonder whether you want to talk to your husband, and maybe he wants to talk to his family, about the possibility that because your parents were from a mixed marriage, it may be that your children, and particularly the one that you're expecting now, might not be white. The baby may be brown or much darker than you're expecting. And the woman looks at the doctor and says, thank you very much indeed for alerting me to that. She then goes off to talk to her husband, who's a dyed-in-the-wool, working class, British white male, who took it extremely well because he knew the family background. He knew that possibility. He then went off to talk to his parents, again from the same sort of background, and they thought, oh, okay, fine. They happened to get on very well with the father, the grandfather, as he would then become the one who was of South African origin. And back in the 1950s, these gentle discussions were taking place. It seems to me that what we're looking at here may have been just a comment from a well-meaning but perhaps slightly not awfully subtle member of the royal household, not necessarily the family, who said to Meghan, and it unfortunately caught her at an awkward time, and because of all the other things that she's had to put up with from not just the British press but press around the world, I'm saying press more than broadcast media, because it seems to be it's more the written word rather than the spoken word that's really getting to her and to Harry, and it might just have hit her at the wrong time, I think we just need to be careful, because there will be dozens and dozens, hundreds, thousands of families around the world for whom this wasn't an issue, and they're going, well, yes, surely you realize with your background, Meghan, your family background, the potential for Archie to have been slightly darker or even considerably darker was there. So it shouldn't be an issue, and it shouldn't, unfortunately, be blown up on either side, because that's one of the problems I'm finding. And I know you've got a rather special lunch date today, but one of the problems I'm finding with the whole of this is that I hate the feeling of being manipulated by the media into thinking about just these three topics, which is basically the rift between Harry and his father and his brother, Meghan's state of mind, and the race card. So that's my sixpenneth. But I just thought that little story from, let's say it again, 1950s middle working class Yorkshire, they were talking about these things and getting on with them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's a great story, and that's kind of the way you would think it would go. You think it would be in this country. Unfortunately, we had a thing in the 1860s called the Civil War, and unfortunately, those feelings about what happened then still are passed on from generation to generation here. And it's a shame, because we've seen it play out. We've seen these people with Confederate flags in the marching through the Capitol. We've seen, with the rise of white supremacist groups coming from the southern part of this country. And it's still that flame still is lit down there, and it burns strongly, unfortunately. And it's, so in certain parts of this country, those kinds of conversations can't be had, or they refuse to be had. And it's a shame. You got what's so interesting, and there's so many, things that don't make sense to me. You've got a state like Alabama, which is one of the worst in the country as far as racism, and it's the breeding ground for the Ku Klux Klan and white supremacist groups. Yet you have the University of Alabama has the best football team in this country, and 100,000 people show up each week to watch a team comprised of probably 90% black players win championships for them. So that's okay. But on the field of play, when Alabama's winning the national championship, you kind of turn a blind eye to it. But in every other issue, it's not acceptable. So I find the hypocrisy of it all very, very interesting. And it's funny, because you said I have a lunch date today. I have a lunch date today with a friend of mine who is a former member of the Los Angeles Dodgers, my favorite.
Oh, fantastic.
This guy played 15 years in the major leagues, which is very, very hard to do, and achieved some amazing accomplishments over time, and is quite well known. But he's black, and he felt that because he was black, he was, he was treated unfairly, and that if he wasn't black, he would have been able to do more things during his playing days. And he says to this day, he feels his teammates look at him as just being a role player rather than being, a superstar. And he feels that they treat him differently as such. My feeling is that, if you're a black player and you played 15 years in the major leagues, that's a great accomplishment in itself. I mean, how many people like me who wanted to be a professional baseball player and never even got the opportunity? He had 19 years more than me. He had 100 million more at bats than I got. He got more innings of play than I ever got. And yet, he's complaining about what happened to him, from 1974 through, 1988. I say, his name is Lee, and I say, look, Lee, baseball is an inherently racist game. I mean, it was invented during the Civil War. It was played by white men of privilege. The owners of these teams are white men of privilege. A lot of the players that came into the major leagues back in the early days and in the heyday of baseball back in the 20s, 30s, 40s were all these southern boys that were, farm hands from the South, from the deep South. These rednecks who were, many of them were racist. And when Jackie Robinson tried to break the color barrier in 1947, look what happened. I mean, it reared its ugly head who these people were. And that's what baseball is. And the fact is that you can at least thank Jackie Robinson for being the guy that took most of the heat to allow people of color to be able to play, So rather than complaining about it, you should celebrate the fact that you had a great career, that you played all these years. And instead of looking back and saying, talking about what was, what can you do now as a player who has notable fame and a name, excuse me.
That's okay.
You know, do something going forward, because well, you know, the George Floyd murders, you know, were the sports teams really, you know, the National Football League, Major League Baseball, the National Basketball Association. There's a lot of black players in these leagues, and they all stood up and said, you know, we're not going to play until there's real change in our society and real change throughout our sports. And so why not get involved with some of the movements that are taking place now to make things better going forward, rather than complaining about what happened to you 50 years ago? That's probably going to be a topic of conversation at our lunch today.
Well, and let me take you, whilst you clear your throat, let me take you back to what you said a moment ago, is that your naivety you wear on your sleeve, fantastic. I think so do I. And it's because we like to let people express themselves and see if we can learn. And if we can't learn, at least we can sit down together and discuss why it is we both come from different, maybe slightly polarized perspectives. And that surely is the thing that we need to scream at the 21st century. How come, after all the wars we've had, of all the divisions and all the things that have driven us apart, why can't we remember the moments when the wars stopped? Because we did sit down, we did talk about what went wrong, and we did try and find a way forward. Now, I'm naive in the sense that we haven't sorted everything out, and we still have flare-ups all over the world, and there's the big division between particularly the communist side of life and China and Russia and North Korea and the rest of the world. But at least we can sometimes find points of mutual understanding. And of course, that's what the pandemic has shown us. The pandemic, the virus, knows neither male nor female, black nor Jew, nor Christian, nor Muslim, nor whatever. It affects everybody. Well, actually, it doesn't affect everybody equally. It does appear to affect those from the BAME community slightly more. But there are other reasons for that. It has sort of leveled us off. And just going back, and before we talk a bit more about Republicans, because we're moving towards the end of our program. But just going back to the pressures that have led Harry and Meghan to come to this particular stage, part of me still also thinks that because of what we've all been through over the last 12 months, we're coming up for the anniversary of it in a couple of weeks' time, the first lockdown here in the United Kingdom, we are sensing, and we are perhaps hypersensitized to our feelings in a way that perhaps we never were before. And mental illness, mental stress, mental anxiety is running through all of our bulletins, all of the talk about getting children back to school, which, of course, in the United Kingdom, and certainly in England, they've managed to do this week. There's so much else going on that has lit the fires and kicked the tires of a whole range of things. So, that's just where I am, and that's where I'm thinking. As I say, I've got to keep a close eye on the time, and you've got to put your dinner jacket on to go out for your lunch. how are the Republicans doing? Have they settled down and realized the error of their ways in choosing a former president as their leader, and are they moving on?
They're still distracting. They're more concerned about the fact that Dr. Seuss books were taken off the shelves because of racial overtones. And they're more concerned about Mr. and Mrs. Potato Head now being called Potato Head because of the transgender sensitivities. No Republicans came on board to support the $1.9 trillion COVID relief, you know, the American Rescue Plan that Biden came up with. He kind of went it alone with the Democrats, it was passed in the House. It was sent to the Senate. Some slight changes were made, but it passed. It's going back to the House for reconciliation and should be on Biden's desk either later this week or next week to get signed. And it'll be a great relief for America. No Republicans, though, went on board with it, which is probably a huge mistake, because it really shows that they didn't care at all about helping small businesses in need, people put food on the table, unemployment benefits for people. Because now with the vaccine being rolling out so fast and things, you know, and Biden hinting that by Christmas things could be back to normal, people are kind of prematurely looking at this and saying, hey, you know, the pandemic's over. Let's get back to where we were. And so a lot of Republican governors are pushing, you know, or relaxing the mask mandates and trying to let their states get back to, you know, to where they were. They think they're going to make points doing that. But you know, and a lot of Republicans are saying, you know, that they didn't get on board with the bill because it provided relief to Democratic, you know, radical left Democratic governors, which is ridiculous because there's, you know, one Fox news host pointed out that there's money going to Republican states as well as Democratic states. So
bless you. Oh, bless you. Goodness gracious. So you've got COVID. Oh, he's taken rough as our Bruce.
Yeah, but let me tell you, the you know, there's a saying in this country: when you learn to drive, one of the things on your driver's test is which is the most dangerous mile to drive, and the answer is it's the last mile before you get home, and I think that's what's playing out here. These everybody's kind of jumping the gun on proclaiming the pandemic over because of the vaccines. And I think that's kind of like, I think we're in that last mile before home, which becomes the most dangerous mile because there's new variations of this virus out there. And, you know, and if we start relaxing the mask mandates, which is, I believe is wrong, you know, I think we should still, you know, wear masks when we can just to protect ourselves and others. I mean, just because you have the vaccine doesn't mean you still can't carry the virus and spread it.
Exactly.
You
know,
it might not attack you the same way, but it could attack somebody else that way. And, you know, what's another month or two or three of just being, you know, cautious, you know, rather than just, you know, throwing it all out there and letting everybody back in school and opening in indoor dining and all. I think that's just being reckless. And puts people at risk, and I think that those that are doing it will pay the price. Unfortunately, you know, hopefully not, you know, because you know it's time. I mean, we're all starting to sense that things are starting to take a turn to get back. I mean, we see more traffic on the freeways, we see more people at restaurants, yeah. We see more people out and about, which is a good sign. It means that people are starting to feel more comfortable that things are under control. And I got to hand it to Joe Biden. He stayed focused. He kept his nose to the grindstone. You know, he got the distribution process fixed. He got the vaccines out, and he's going to far surpass the number that he promised. And I really believe with all my heart that by Christmas it'll be a new normal by Christmas. But it's a new normal. I mean, you just can't. Again,
it's not the old.
It's not the old. It's the same way. And you'll adjust. I mean, we'll adjust to it the same way we adjusted after 9/11. And, you know, we had to deal with different means of security before, you know, that we didn't have before. But, you know, we accepted that is a way to keep us safe. And I'll tell you what. I mean, I don't think people are going to be I think wearing a mask is probably a good thing out in public anyway, because of the air we breathe, the people that we meet, you know, we don't, you know. You know, there's something to be said about wearing a mask. I don't think it's all that big of a deal. I mean, I just make it a habit of just putting that gaiter that they call it around, you know, just kind of like a scarf around my neck and just have just in case. I mean, I don't see it as infringing on my constitutional rights. I just see it as being as a safety precaution, you know, for you and for me. So it is what it is.
So we can have a picture. You're about to go off hobbling into the dust distance. On your two wonky or your wonky knee, bless you. I feel for you so much. And Lee Lacey, where are you meeting? Are you meeting outside? Are you eating outside? Is it a picnic in the park or something like that?
Well, it's supposed to rain today, but Now, we passed a little place called Nat's, a little cafe, and I pointed it out to you as we were driving home one afternoon. I said, that's another place I go to for breakfast, and it's just a couple blocks from here, and they set up a tent on the sidewalk, and it's a nice experience. They make really good food. It's cheap. You know, it'll be a nice place to sit down and have a chat. He's actually has a doctor's appointment, which turns out it's right across in a doctor's building across the street from the restaurant. It's in the same building where I went for my dental appointment yesterday. He's going to be so. it'll be an interesting conversation for sure. The food will be good. I know that for sure, but then the conversation will definitely be of interest, and I'm happy to report back, you know, what came out of it when we chat again next week, if you'll have me.
Well, that That would be fantastic, so long as you've managed to survive the week, survive your MRI, survive the slight cough you've got. But it's the passion that you've been broadcasting with. You probably need to lubricate. Let's just say, Bruce K. Rosenblum, thank you so much indeed for spending time with us here at Siren Radio. And let's look forward to this time next week when who knows what we'll be talking about. But one thing I will be reminding you about will be Lee Lacy and how you got on in the conversation. So for the moment, Bruce, thank you very much indeed for being with us.
You're very welcome, Andrew. And again, I send all my best wishes to all my friends up in Lincoln. Stay safe and healthy, and we'll talk to you next week.